From NPR News, this is special coverage of President Trump's press conference with Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. I'm Jeremy Hobson. The two presidents are expected to take questions this hour as the House continues its first day of public hearings in the impeachment inquiry. Our guests right now, as we wait for the presidents, are NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez. He's in Washington. Hi, Franco.
Hello.
And we're also joined by NPR international correspondent Peter Kenyon, who's in Istanbul, Turkey. Peter, welcome to you.
Hi, thanks very much.
Well, and let's set the stage here, Franco. Will President Trump, first of all, wait until the hearing is over to start his press conference?
Not necessarily. I mean, President Trump usually, he often can be late, but I don't foresee him holding off until this is over. That could certainly happen. I mean, you have a foreign leader with his own schedule. I would expect that they would try to keep to the schedule as much as possible. That said, these press conferences often start late.
Well, and I would expect that the president is eager to respond to what's been happening today on Capitol Hill, first and foremost.
Absolutely. I mean, what's happening on Capitol Hill is such a big deal. There is so much going on. We've already heard, there was a lot of expectation that we were going to hear a repeat of earlier testimony that was done behind closed doors. And we're already hearing about new stuff, such as William Taylor, the acting ambassador to Ukraine, testifying that his own staffers overheard President Trump on the phone asking another ambassador, Gordon Sondland, about the quote-unquote investigations. So there is a lot of things to get to.
Peter, you're in Istanbul. So much has happened recently with Turkey. I want you to just take your time, because we have it as we wait for the president, and remind us where we are right now after Turkey's invasion of northern Syria, which just weeks ago caused so much angst in Washington because Turkey was attacking a U.S. ally, the Kurds.
Well, that's one of a number of points of contention between these two NATO allies. Turkey has for a long time now been very angry about American support for these Syrian Kurdish militia fighters known as the YPG. They were lauded for their work in helping the U.S. retake land from ISIS in Syria. But Turkey views them as terrorists aligned with Kurdish militants that the Turkish military has been fighting for over three decades. So over U.S. objections, Turkey launched this military operation with an eye toward pushing these YPG fighters off the border area, and then also secondarily to create a space, they called it a safe zone, where it's planning to return a million or more Syrian refugees who are now living in Turkey. Now, some of this has been done with Russia's assistance. The YPG fighters did move away from the border, although just recently President Erdogan has complained they haven't stayed far enough away from the Turkish safe zone. But anyway, there are certain signs of progress happening there, but this idea of moving a million people into this safe zone, which is villages and fields right now, is probably quite a long ways off in the future.
Yeah. Well, and Peter, it was a surprise to many people when this invasion happened that it happened with the blessing of President Trump after a phone call with Erdogan.
Well, it certainly happened in a way that it made it look like Trump had given the green light. And that's certainly how Turkey saw it then. And it was even a sense that the Turks moved in quickly before the Americans could change their mind or Congress could step in or something. So very soon after this moment with President Trump, the military convoy started rolling across the border into northern Syria.
As you mentioned, there are some other issues that are front and center today when it comes to the U.S. relationship with Turkey. One is an air defense system that Turkey is buying from Russia. Tell us more about that.
Right. Well, it started when Turkey and Washington could not come to a deal on Turkey acquiring U.S. Patriot missiles. After that, Washington was not pleased to see Ankara turn to Russia and then buy a Russian S-400 missile defense system. That prompted Washington to remove Turkey from the F-35 joint fighter program. And this is not just a bilateral issue. These missiles are not compatible with NATO systems either. Turkey's a longstanding NATO member. That started some people asking, does Turkey still belong in this alliance? More recently, the U.S. has reversed course and said, well, maybe we'll put you back into this system, but that all depends on you not activating this Russian system. Now, they've spent billions of dollars to acquire this Russian missile defense system, and apparently the thought from Washington now is that they will just leave it there, never activate it, just let it sit there, and then talks can resume on possibly Patriot missiles, possibly F-35 jets. So apparently that is going to be one of the things under discussion.
Peter, one more thing I want to talk about is the trade deal that's being bandied about between the U.S. and Turkey. Is that a real possibility, that there would be some sort of trade deal that they agree to?
It certainly is something that Erdogan has picked up on and sounded interested in. And in some brief comments, it sounded like President Trump was willing to talk about that as well. I mean, the trade is somewhere in the 20 plus million a year range now. I hope I have that number right. But the goal to get it up to 100 billion a year would be a major increase. Now, if a lot of that is taken up with these military acquisitions, you know how expensive they are. So I can't say exactly what would be involved, but if it's separate trade going up to 100 billion, that would be very big.
I want to get both of your thoughts on this, starting with you, Franco. President Erdogan is somebody who is seen as an authoritarian at this point. He came in as a reformer, but he is seen as an authoritarian. His last visit to Washington, as I recall, didn't go so well. There were reports of his guards beating up protesters. Are there people who just don't think that President Trump should be holding this meeting with him in the first place in Washington?
There are several people, many people who do not feel that President Erdogan should be rewarded with such an esteemed visit at the White House. I mean, and many of these are Republicans, lawmakers who have argued that he does not deserve this honor because of Turkey's actions in Syria. As I mentioned, this criticism is from his own party, which makes this an even stickier situation. Many of these Republicans feel like when Trump pulled the U.S. troops out, he basically gave up American influence in the region, abandoned U.S. allies, that being the Kurds. And look, I mean, we're seeing examples of this repeatedly. House Republicans just last month, as we know, they rarely buck the president, but they did en masse over U.S. foreign policy and voted for sweeping sanctions against Turkey over this assault. So this is a very sensitive meeting, and there's a lot of concern about those kind of things.
But those sanctions went away not long after they were put into place, right? And we haven't heard very much from those Republicans since.
That's correct. I mean, that shows kind of the power that Trump has, continues to have over the party. But we also know that, you know, and different people have different perspectives on this, but he brought in several lawmakers into a meeting with Erdogan. Now, foreign leaders will come to the White House all the time, regularly. I mean, they're in and out. But very rarely is there a case where lawmakers join the president in that meeting. I can't remember of it. I queried several of my colleagues here at NPR as well as elsewhere if they had heard of such a thing, and they say they also feel that it's very rare. Some of the people that were invited were some of those who were most critical. For example, Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Jim Risch, he teamed up with Democrats to write legislation that would have punished Turkey, that would have restricted arms sales. Lindsey Graham, who obviously is a very close ally of President Trump, he was also extremely critical of President Trump on Syria, on Turkey, his moves in Syria. And he also is there at the meeting, as well as Ted Cruz of Texas, Joni Ernst of Iowa, and Rick Scott of Florida.
So, Peter, as Franco was saying there, it's seen as a big honor to come and have a White House visit like this. Is it seen as a big deal in Turkey that the President Erdogan is at the White House with President Trump?
Sure. I think in most countries you would find that that's considered a pretty big deal to go talk to the president in Washington, D.C. Yeah, absolutely. And just one thing I forgot to mention when we were talking about these fighter jets, the F-35s. President Trump just said on television that I project that we will work something out on the F-35. So that's we can watch and see what that is.
He's also been making some comments about French President Emmanuel Macron's recent comments about NATO being brain dead. Can you, Peter, fill us in on what that's all about and what President Trump has been saying?
Well, I haven't been following Macron's comments in depth, but certainly that is there's been a lot of criticism of NATO over the years, and Macron is the latest to add to that, and a lot of pushback from both Trump and Erdogan on that tonight.
Frank, if I could jump in there, Jeremy, you know, President Trump and the lawmakers brought that up today in their meeting in the Oval Office, and they raised a lot of concerns about Macron's comments, saying it was inappropriate and unacceptable, and they very much pushed back on Macron.
I just want to give our listeners an update if they're just tuning in to what's going on right now. A lot of things going on in Washington. On one side of Pennsylvania Avenue on Capitol Hill, the hearing, the first public hearing in the impeachment inquiry, going on today with two witnesses, two diplomats who have been testifying for many hours before the House Intelligence Committee. And on the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue at the White House, we are waiting for President Trump to come out and speak with the Turkish President Erdogan. They're going to hold a press conference together, take questions from reporters. Probably some of those questions will be about the U.S. relationship with Turkey, but some of them will also be about what's happening on Capitol Hill. And President Trump is going to get his first chance in front of the cameras to talk about what's going on in the impeachment inquiry. Franco, you said that he had actually has he already said something today as this has been going on? I know he's been tweeting. Has he actually commented at all publicly?
He had a what's called a pool spray earlier today. Basically, what he said was that he's been too busy to watch the hearings. He had not yet this was around noon. He had not received a briefing from his staff on the impeachment inquiry. He said he would eventually hear get a report of some kind. That said, as you pointed out, he has been tweeting throughout the morning, also retweeting other members of Congress or members of Congress, their tweets. Sometimes these include excerpts from the impeachment inquiry in his defense. I think it really shows that while you have such a sensitive meeting today with Erdogan that carries its own baggage, mm-hmm. its own controversy, that President Trump is clearly also thinking about other areas that are very much of importance to him.
Well, let's listen to a little bit of what's happened today on Capitol Hill. The House Intelligence Committee hearing from William Taylor, the acting ambassador to Ukraine, and George Kent, the deputy assistant secretary of state. Both of them had testified earlier behind closed doors, but today they were out in public. And Taylor told the committee he learned that security assistance and a White House meeting with the president were both conditioned on Ukraine carrying out investigations that President Trump wanted. He refers here to Gordon Sondland, who's the U.S. ambassador to the European Union.
On that same day, September 1st, I sent Ambassador Sondland a text message asking if we are now saying that the security assistance and a White House meeting are conditioned on investigations. Ambassador Sondland responded, asking me to call him, which I did. During that phone call, Ambassador Sondland told me that President Trump had told him that he wants President Zelensky to state publicly that Ukraine will investigate Burisma and alleged Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election. Ambassador Sondland also told me that he now recognized that he had made a mistake by earlier telling Ukrainian officials that only a White House meeting with President Zelensky was dependent on a public announcement of the investigations. In fact, Ambassador Sondland said, everything was dependent on such an announcement, including security assistance. He said that President Trump wanted President Zelensky in a public box by making a public statement about ordering such investigations.
And President Trump has insisted he did nothing wrong. Republicans are defending him today. Here's Devin Nunes, who's the ranking member on the committee, in his opening statement.
What we will witness today is a televised theatrical performance staged by the Democrats. Ambassador Taylor and Mr. Kent, I'd like to welcome you here. I'd like to congratulate you for passing the Democrat Star Chamber auditions held for the last weeks in the basement of the Capitol. It seems you agreed, witting or unwittingly, to participate in a drama. But the main performance, the Russia hoax, has ended, and you've been cast in the low-rent Ukrainian sequel. I'll conclude by noting the immense damage the politicized bureaucracy has done to Americans' faith in government. Though executive branch employees are charged with implementing the policies set by our president, who is elected and responsible to the American people, elements of the civil service have decided that they, not the president, are really in charge.
So that's a little bit of what's been going on Capitol Hill today over the last many hours. Now, we are told that President Trump and President Erdogan may be out momentarily to start their press conference. So as we wait for that, we're joined by Peter Kenyon of NPR, who's in Istanbul, Turkey, and Franco Ordonez, NPR's White House correspondent. And Peter, why don't you just give us a little background on Erdogan and what we should know about him as we wait for him to come out here with President Trump and face the press?
Well, he's an observant Muslim, a religious man. He is probably the strongest in terms of personality and governing style, probably the strongest leader possibly since Mustafa Kemal Atatürk back in the last century. He grew up mainly in a neighborhood here in Istanbul. He was known for his boxing and his drama. He is probably the most powerful man in Turkey. Well, not probably. He definitely is. Mm-hmm. And he has run this country for a long, long time and could, with another election victory or so, be in power for many, many years to come.
And Atatürk, who you mentioned there, the sort of the founder of modern Turkey and somebody who was very in favor of Turkey being a secular Muslim country. Erdogan, not really that way at all. And I've heard, I don't know if you've seen this, Peter, but I've heard that in some public buildings, the picture of Atatürk has been taken down and replaced by a picture of Erdogan.
Well, things have been changing slowly over time. He's always overtly very respectful to Atatürk, as everyone here in Turkey pretty much must be. It's fairly much required. But I noticed starting years ago that the pictures, there used to be side by side, the picture of Erdogan and the picture of Atatürk, and the pictures of Erdogan kept getting bigger and bigger until they were dwarfing the pictures of Atatürk in some places. A lot of Turks remain very loyal to the Atatürk era and to that leader, but there's no question that this is also a very powerful man here.
Well, and he's been cracking down on dissent quite a bit, even jailing journalists, right?
Well, yes, there's this reputation. You read this all the time in stories that Turkey is the world's leading jailer of journalists, and that's a distinction they've had for a little while now, a few years at least. And it hasn't really gotten a lot easier. There is a well-known journalist here, Ahmet Altan. A court just said he'd done enough time. Let's cancel the rest of his sentence and send him out. He was released. And then a week later, he's arrested again. So it's still going on.
Franco, as we wait for the two presidents to come out and take questions from reporters, what are you going to be watching for President Trump?
Well, I'll definitely be watching for, you know, seeing how the interaction between the two is. You know, President Trump has called Erdogan a good friend. Yet in many ways, the relationship between Turkey and the United States is at a very, very difficult point. And there is so much concern about Turkey's growing closeness with Russia. You talked earlier about the defense systems. And I will also be watching to see how much he is able to talk about Turkey, and as opposed to the impeachment, because it'll be telling who he calls on among the American press and the foreign press. In these situations, typically each president will give two questions to each side.
They call it a two by two, right?
Correct. A 2x2. And depending on who he asks, will be a little bit telling of how open he is for these questions and perhaps how prepared he is. Because, as you note, very likely one of those questions, if not both, from the American journalists are going to be about the impeachment inquiry. It is this is the thing that is really consuming so much of Washington right now.
Do you think that it's possible that Trump decides to just let this go longer than usual? Sometimes he feels like he's in the mood to take a lot of questions and he turns it into a full-blown press conference.
I mean, I think one thing that I have learned about covering President Trump over the years is that I cannot get in his head. And one thing that is predictable is how unpredictable he is. In these cases, typically, he will have the 2-for-2 questions, and then he will excuse the foreign leader, and then he will continue to take more questions. Though in the past, he's been in the Oval Office where he's taken question after question after question. I can just think it was either last month or the month before with the Finnish president.
Who has to sit there and watch him do it.
It's an amazing experience, and being in the room sometimes you learn quite a lot. Will he do that in this case? I don't know. There's so much going on. I could see him wanting to kind of keep control. I can tell you that his staff is going to want to keep control on this. That said, President Trump is President Trump, and he can do. He's shown us that he's full of surprises.
Peter Kenyon in Istanbul, is President Erdogan used to taking questions from the press?
Sure, yeah. He does news conferences. He's been in these situations before. This is not going to be a problem. I mean, of course, there's sensitive subjects on the Turkish side as well. He's been pushing for a long, long time to get this cleric, a guy named Fethullah Gülen, extradited because Turkey thinks he was responsible for fomenting a coup here in Turkey a few years back. He denies it, the cleric that is, but the Turkish government is accusing the U.S. essentially of harboring a wanted terrorist. So this is one of several sore points in the relationship. There's lots of things they could be talking about.
And why hasn't the U.S. Done what Turkey wants on Fethullah Gülen?
Well, despite, I don't know, some 70, 80 or more boxes of evidence, according to the Turks, that they sent, the Justice Department said they weren't convinced that there was any clear and convincing evidence that justified bringing this before a judge to decide on extradition. And that's left the government in Turkey quite upset.
Franco, we've heard so many times about President Trump's affection for strongmen, for people like Erdogan and for people like Vladimir Putin and other leaders that are leading in a more authoritarian style. What about that?
I mean, it's very true. I mean, this is something that we have seen over and over again. It's one of the biggest criticisms, perhaps, from in the diplomatic community, how President Trump has been accused of treating adversaries more like allies, and traditional allies, for example, those in Europe, more like adversaries. You know, I've talked with people who are close to President Trump, who have studied President Trump or Donald Trump, the, you know, before and after. And some of the things that they point to his corporate background, his business background. President Trump spent years and years running his own business. He was the leader of that business. He was, you know, the person who made the decisions. And as I've been told, it's possible that he respects those from other governments who also are in a position to make those decisions right away, and that he has had a challenging time in kind of a more U.S. system where there is a lot more hoops to go through, a lot more bureaucracy, a lot more chains that you have to go through, you know, other departments, other clearances. And that's been a little bit of a difference from his style.
We have reached the bottom of the hour, so let me welcome our listeners once again. If they're just tuning in, you are listening to special coverage from NPR News as we wait for President Trump to come out and face the press along with the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who is on a visit to Washington, and they're going to take a couple of questions from the press. Now, meanwhile, as this is happening, There's also the impeachment inquiry hearing going on, the first public hearing in that inquiry going on Capitol Hill. And it sounds like they are wrapping up as we speak right now. The chairman, Adam Schiff, of the Intelligence Committee, is speaking, but it sounds like they are starting to wrap things up. And I imagine, Franco, that as soon as they do, President Trump will be out there at the microphone.
I think that's very possible. I mean, I think that is a likely scenario. These kind of things have happened in the past where President Trump has kind of waited for certain things to happen, certain issues that he's been following to come about. So I think that could be the point. I can tell you that the press has gathered in the East Room of the White House. They are waiting for that. At the same time, I'm getting reports from my colleagues that no officials have moved into the room. So it could be. Typically, what happens is other U.S. officials will start to file in. They'll line up those first two sets of rows of chairs. They'll sit down, and then just a few minutes later, the president will move in as well. So that's something that we'll be watching for sure.
Well, and as we wait for that, Peter, let me go back to you and just once again have you lay out what are the key things from a U.S.-Turkey relationship perspective that you're going to be watching for or that are on the table as these two leaders take questions?
Well, you know, we started with the F-35s and the missiles, and that is a big one because it just impacts NATO. It impacts so many different things. So if they can find some kind of an agreement on that, that would be very big, and that would remove a major stalling point. There's some strange things that have been happening lately. There was this letter from Trump to Erdogan. It was full of things like, don't be a fool, don't be a tough guy, let's make a good deal. Not exactly diplomatic language. Also included a threat with Trump saying he didn't want to be responsible for destroying the Turkish economy, quote, and I will, if things don't go the way he thinks they should. A Turkish spokesman said it was quite unusual to see that show up in Ankara, and it was immediately thrown in the bin. So that set an interesting tone. And as you know, as we've noticed, there are quite a few disputes between the two countries, although the personal relationship, as Franco mentioned, seems to be quite strong.
I want to just bring in one more voice here as we wait for the two presidents to show up and take questions from the press. Jim Walsh, who is with the Security Studies Program at MIT. Jim, as you wait to hear from a foreign policy and a security perspective, what will you be watching for from President Trump and President Erdogan?
Well, as you were just discussing, there are any number of national security-related issues, whether it's Russian defensive missiles, whether it's NATO nuclear weapons, whether it's Syria, the Kurds, on and on. But I must say that for both our president and the head of Turkey's government, personality matters. I mean, Erdogan is his own often unpredictable person who attacks back and forth in sometimes completely opposite ways. They both are, I would say, thin-skinned. They both see themselves as leaders with a capital L who will not suffer critics easily. And so, you know, we're used to thinking that it's all about issue X and issue Y, and those are important. But with these two guys in particular, it's also a matter of personality and how that meeting gets off. I mean, if it gets off to a good start, you get one outcome. And if it gets off to a bad start, you know, something else could happen.
Well, it seems like after what we just went through with the Turkish invasion in northern Syria, with what appeared to be a green light from President Trump, that the relationship between Trump and Erdogan has only gotten stronger. Jim, would you say that's the case?
I would say that's likely the case. I mean, there's another way to – there's several ways that one might guess what has happened here. One is they've both got something that they want, and so they're feeling good about one another. Now, the question would naturally be, what did the U.S. get? That's not entirely clear, but that might be secret for all I know. It may be that Erdogan thinks he won. He may tell himself a story, and the story may be true or false, but he may tell himself a story. Look, I looked Donald Trump in the eye, and he backed down, and I got what he wanted, and I still have the leverage here. You know, I can still go in and invade Syria, and he can't really stop me from doing that. So he may walk in with a slight – they may – They may both be in a good mood right now, but Erdogan may think that he's the winner, and therefore, you know, he may overplay that. That's one of, when personality matters. That's one of the, you know, one of the intangibles you can't predict. If Erdogan feels really good about what happened, after all, he's getting the presidential visit, right? That's one of the things he wanted. He got it. He wanted the U.S. essentially out of Syria. He got mostly that. He's been getting what he wants for very little cost. He may push his advantage, what he perceives to be an advantage, and push it too far. So, yes, you know, they're not screaming at each other, but I would not hazard a prediction here until the meeting's over.
Okay, Jim Walsh at the MIT Security Studies Program, thank you. And I want to just update our listeners that the impeachment hearing on Capitol Hill has just wrapped up. So that probably means that President Trump will very shortly be coming to the microphone with President Erdogan. Now, this was scheduled for, I think, 3:10 this afternoon, but obviously the White House is watching what's happening on Capitol Hill, and that may have delayed this press conference by a little bit. We've got NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez and NPR international correspondent Peter Kenyon, who is in Istanbul, Turkey, as we wait for the two leaders to start taking questions. Peter, we just heard Jim talk there about the two men, Erdogan and Trump. Does it appear in Turkey that Erdogan is stronger after what just happened with Syria?
Well, he's always been a strong leader here, although in the most recent election, he wasn't running, but his party did not do so well, losing the major cities. So there has been some question. Is the aura of invincibility that surrounded him since, well, the early 2000s, 2002, 2003, is that starting to wear off? He doesn't have to stand for re-election until, I think it's 2023 now. So it may be a while before that gets tested. But yeah, that's certainly something that political analysts are talking about.
Franco Ordonez, what do you think President Trump has made so far of what's been happening on Capitol Hill today with the impeachment inquiry?
Well, I mean, I think it's certainly continued to raise his temperature level, as we've seen on the tweets and him aggressively continuing to tweet out. I mean, just before these hearings came out, he was explaining how these hearings should not be happening at all, that this is a hoax, that this is a witch hunt. He continues to, you know, make the argument that this is an irrelevant investigation that is strictly on for partisan reasons. I would expect that he's going to continue to talk in that light today if this is brought up. The president has kind of stuck to his script. His concern in many ways has been that the Republicans themselves have not stuck to that same script. We heard over the weekend from some of the Republicans, allies of him, his, saying that that they felt like the transcript and the testimony of President Trump allegedly putting pressure on the Ukraine government was inappropriate. However, it wasn't an impeachable offense. President Trump called that a fool's errand and that Republicans need to get their story straighter, that he wanted them to very clearly say that nothing was done wrong. He did not want them to acknowledge that there was any inappropriateness, any concern. And I think that kind of back and forth between the White House, President Trump, and Republicans on Capitol Hill also revealed a bit of the lack of coordination between the two sides. Republicans are not clear on how they want to defend the president. And I think that's why you're getting kind of like these dual approaches. I did talk with the White House this morning. They say that they are creating a quote unquote rapid response team for these hearings, that they have the press team, the counsel's team, and the legislative affairs team now working together to give rapid response to kind of abut any type of things that come out of these hearings. And I think that's why we're starting to see talking points being circulated from the White House to Republican surrogates. They're trying to get this story coordinated, and that's been a challenge that they've had for the last several weeks.
Franco, are you hearing anything more about the timing here? As we said, the impeachment inquiry hearing has just wrapped up on Capitol Hill. What about this press conference that we're waiting for? Have you gotten any more indications about when that might begin?
Well, one of my colleagues just did check in with the White House, and they did not have an update yet. We have, as far as I understand, the officials haven't walked into the room, and we're still getting kind of more reports from the meeting with the senators. One point I will make is, you know, during, you know, just to show how unusual this meeting with the foreign, not just the foreign leader, but to have the senators come in. Senator Graham kind of remarked how unusual it was, and he said he had never had an opportunity like this before. He said he appreciated it, and he said the purpose of this meeting is to have an American civics lesson for our friends in Turkey, and there's a pony in there somewhere if we can find it, to which Trump said, and I think we will. I think it just goes to show how extraordinarily rare some of the things that we're seeing right now as all of this unravels.
Well, and the senators who've been meeting with President Trump and Turkish President Erdogan today, all Republicans, Lindsey Graham, Jim Risch, Joni Ernst, Rick Scott, and Ted Cruz, you know, there are senators in the U.S. Senate right now, Franco, who would say that President Erdogan and Turkey are not friends of the United States.
That's absolutely correct. I mean, that is why there was so much pushback to Erdogan's visit, and that's why there was so much really almost unprecedented criticism of the president after his move to pull U.S. troops from northern Syria. I mean, we have seen time and time again Republicans not standing up to the president, being concerned of retribution from the president. I spoke with Senator Jeff Flake, former Senator Jeff Flake, about this, who told me that if you criticize the president's character, decisions, or his personality and character, he will respond very vociferously, as he did with Jack Flake, as he did with Congressman Mark Sanford, two senators who were essentially pushed out because of President Trump's, you know, kind of tweets and anger against them for them speaking out against Trump. But, and this is a big but, on Syria, we saw a lot of Republicans come out and speak against President Trump in some of the strongest language. Lindsey Graham was one of the most outspoken, who said this could be one of the things that President Trump would regret the most, pulling troops out of Syria. Other senators said they were pulling their other members of Congress said they were pulling their support for President Trump. This was extraordinary to see Republicans speaking out against the president on any issue, considering the, you know, power that President Trump continues to hold over the Republican Party, largely because of polls.
Peter Kenyon in Istanbul, let's just talk about Turkey for a second, because it is in such a crucial location in the world. It borders Europe. It borders Syria. It borders Iraq. It borders Iran and former Soviet states as well. It is right in the center of so many conflicts and issues that are going on in the world.
Well, it is, and there's no shortage of stories to cover here. As you mentioned, naming all those folks on the other side of the border, there's very often a conflict going on in at least one of those places. And there's also Armenia. There's the long-standing annual debate over the 1915 killings. Was it a genocide? Was it just an act of war? It is a very difficult neighborhood that Turkey is in, and it's also, just about a founding member of NATO. It's been involved, got troops in Afghanistan, the troops elsewhere. It's, it's a complicated place and fascinating to be here.
Well, and there have been some who have questioned Turkey's membership in NATO, right, in recent weeks have said Maybe they shouldn't be in NATO.
Yeah, especially after this push into Syria and some of the other things that they have done. It's been quite a serious discussion in some quarters. It hasn't gotten any traction, despite the fact that they have turned towards Russia for this military missile defense system. They've always dealt with each other, Turkey and Russia, but if that relationship becomes a strategic military alliance, as opposed to the one Turkey has had for decades and decades with the United States, that would be a huge shift, and that's something that has, I think, people here and in the U.S. Concerned.
Would you say that at this point, though, that Turkey is closer with the United States than it is with Moscow?
Oh, I would, yes. Despite these bumps in the road, I think certainly at the public level here, most Turkish people you talk to still believe, no matter how many moves Ankara makes in Russia's direction, that the alliance with the U.S. is Turkey's most important relationship. And I think most people here would like to see this meeting end with that relationship at least still intact and, if possible, on firmer footing.
If you're just joining us, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is special coverage from NPR News, and we are waiting for President Trump and the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to face the press and take some questions at a press conference after a meeting that Erdogan has been having with President Trump and a number of Republican senators in Washington. And they've been having that meeting as House Democrats and Republicans have been holding a hearing on Capitol Hill with two witnesses in the impeachment inquiry. This is the first day of public hearings in the impeachment inquiry. That's been going on for many hours, but that hearing has just wrapped up. So now we wait for President Trump's response to what has been happening there, but also to all the issues that we've been talking about when it comes to the U.S. relationship with Turkey. Franco Ordonez, what would you say is, from the White House's perspective today, is the headline out of the impeachment inquiry? Is there anything that has changed the dynamic at all, or has this just been a public airing of things that we already knew?
I'm not, from the White House perspective, I'm not sure if I could say what their immediate takeaway would be. But what I can say is, just watching some of the feedback from some of the Republican allies and the supporters who have been in close contact with the White House, that certainly one strategic attack has been that the individuals testifying today did not have direct conversations with President Trump. They seem to be indicating there was some distance. It was raising some questions about whether these things were directed by President Trump, and just repeatedly making the argument that this was a partisan effort, and that there was no collusion, and that there was no obstruction. I think they continue to kind of repeat those same lines over and over again, and oftentimes putting Ambassador Taylor and George Kent of the State Department in a position where they can't answer a question, and the Republicans and other members are simply making their own points.
And by the way, President Trump will be speaking with President Erdogan, who, as we said, seen as an authoritarian. And many people, as we've been talking about, Franco, don't believe that he should even be invited to the White House.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. They were very concerned about this visit, this invite, and I think that's why we're seeing so many continue to see so much criticism and so much discussion about this. I did receive word that some of the officials are moving in to sit down, so maybe this press conference will take place in the foreseeable future. As you noted, now that the the impeachment inquiry hearing is over, they may be able to start. One thing that this does allow is for television networks to kind of take Trump's news conference live. They don't have to worry about a split screen. There's no kind of competing news to switch back and forth. Now they can have a kind of a clear shot. And certainly President Trump is going to want that opportunity to get his message out and to get his own narrative out. And we'll see what that is.
Well, it's good that they're about to start, because I was about to ask Peter to just do a short modern history of Turkey, but we'll skip that, Peter. Peter, just to remind our listeners, especially if they're just tuning in, because there have been a number of different special coverages going on today on NPR, and maybe they're just flipping over to this one now so that they can hear the president's response. What's at stake for Turkey in this meeting between President Trump and President Erdogan in this press conference that is about to begin?
Well, there's a number of disputes that they've got. This problem with this cleric in Pennsylvania, and the question of whether he needs to be extradited. There's question of these missiles, especially, and the anger in Washington at Ankara turning to Russia and buying Russian missiles. I mean, if they can make progress on some of those issues, I think the relationship will come out a bit stronger.
Franco, you said that officials are starting to move in to the room. Who else will be in that room besides the two presidents?
Well, we're not. I've put that question to some of my colleagues. I'm not entirely sure yet. That said, considering how these meetings typically happen, the officials who were in the Oval Office meeting often also come out for the press conference. And I can tell you that some of the people that were in the meeting included Jared Kushner, President Trump's son-in-law, as well as advisor, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, Robert O'Brien, the National Security, the acting National Security Advisor, as well as the Secretary of State Pompeo. I would not be surprised at all also if you have the members of Congress who were part of that meeting, the senators, Lindsey Graham, mm-hmm. Joni Ernst, Ted Cruz, and I think a few others
Rick
that were
Scott
there.
And Jim Risch also, yeah.
Thank you. I wouldn't be surprised if they're there as well.
Do you think that Republicans on Capitol Hill are waiting to hear how President Trump responds to the impeachment inquiry and they'll take their talking points from him today?
I think that's very likely. I mean, we have spoken with Republicans and we have seen from Republicans that oftentimes the communication between the two sides of Pennsylvania Avenue is not always direct conversation. Sometimes it's either through Twitter or it's through the media. We were talking earlier about how President Trump was reprimanding Republicans via Twitter, expressing his distaste for some of the strategic messaging that they were doing over the weekend at such a critical time before these hearings were going to take place. The message very clearly from President Trump to Capitol Hill is that he wants senators and members of Congress to defend him stronger. He wants them to be more direct and more forceful, and he wants them to also say that he did nothing wrong, point to the transcript, encourage others to read the transcript, which he says shows that there was no pressure. And they also indicate repeatedly that the Ukrainian president also says there was no pressure.
Okay, a couple of pieces of news that have just come out as you've been speaking, Franco. Number one, the House Intelligence Committee Democrats have defeated a motion which would have compelled testimony by the whistleblower. This is something that Republicans have been asking for. They want to hear from the original whistleblower. We don't know the identity of that person, but the Democrats have just defeated the motion to do that. The other piece of news involves the 2020 race. Interesting that it comes out on this day when this impeachment inquiry is happening and right before we hear from President Trump, which is that former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick has decided to enter the Democratic presidential race. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. Franco, I know maybe that's not your wheelhouse yet because you like to cover people once they get into the White House, but your thoughts on another candidate on the Democratic side?
Oh my gosh, to have another person, you know, we, you know, covering 10 people on the stage before it was 20, more than 20, having two Democratic hearings. I think there's been such a push within the Democratic Party and probably among others wanting and urging, even urging Democrats to start to whittle down the numbers. Obviously, some have left, you know, the biggest name possibly being Beto O'Rourke, and that they're in an interest in the numbers being whittled down and being more direct. So I find it very interesting that Patrick is possibly entering the race. And obviously also we have that big question about Michael Bloomberg and whether he is going to enter the race officially or not.
So much going on today in Washington. Franco, do you recall a time when we've had so many different things happening at the same time on the same day from different quarters, basically?
You know, I can't think of an example where there are so many things happening at the same time. However, in this administration, what we have learned is that news moves sometimes by the hour,
right,
sometimes by the 15-minute increment. In Washington, you know, there used to be more lulls. There may be like a news story once a week or sometimes even longer. Here in this administration, it really is sometimes trial by fire. And we are jumping to cover things, you know, from moment to moment. And sometimes it's hard to cover everything because you have competing news essentially happening at the same time.
Well, and as you look at how the press is covering what's going on today, the headlines from the New York Times, impeachment testimony, Trump cares more about the investigations of Biden. That's in quotes. Fox News, bombshell or hearsay. That's their headline. The Washington Post, new testimony ties Trump more directly to Ukraine pressure, and the BBC saying new claim made as impeachment inquiry goes public. They're talking about some of the commentary today from Ambassador William Taylor, who was one of the people testifying on Capitol Hill. If you are just joining us, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is special coverage from NPR News, and we are waiting for President Trump to start a news conference, which was scheduled to start about 50 minutes ago, and we are waiting for that to happen. And when he does, he will be with the president of Turkey, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who is visiting Washington, and he will also be able to give comments for the first time since today's testimony on Capitol Hill wrapped up. Stay with us. We're going to restart this in just about 30 seconds as we wait for the president. From NPR News, this is special coverage of President Trump's press conference with Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. I'm Jeremy Hobson. The two presidents are expected to take questions any moment now. The House continues its first day of public hearings in the impeachment inquiry. The first day of testimony has just wrapped up. And we've got with us NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez in Washington and NPR international correspondent Peter Kenyon in Istanbul, Turkey. Set the stage for us, Franco. President Trump has been, no doubt, at least keeping one eye on the hearing that's been going on Capitol Hill. But I'm sure reporters are going to be asking questions about his response to that first and foremost.
Yeah, there's no question about that. This is, you know, obviously this was such a very sensitive meeting with the Turkish President Erdogan. But clearly the president's mind and so much of Washington's mind is on something else, that being the impeachment. We had two top officials, diplomats, testify today about what they said was pressure by the United States government against Ukraine to investigate a political rival. A lot of what we heard today were things that we knew about this pressure. about concerns that, for example, William Taylor, he is the acting ambassador to Ukraine. He had seen and heard about this kind of pressure, concerns he had raised over text, for example, about this being a political move to investigate a former political rival or a current political rival, that being Joe Biden, and investigating Joe Biden's son's connection to a Ukraine energy company. But we did learn some new things today, or alleged new things, such as William Taylor, the acting ambassador, testifying that one of his staffers overheard President Trump on the phone asking another ambassador, Gordon Sondland, the ambassador to the EU, about quote-unquote investigations. According to Taylor's testimony today, Sondland further told this staffer that President Trump cares more about the investigation of Biden, which Giuliani was pressuring for. Sondland also told Trump that the Ukrainians were ready to move forward. So there were a lot of things going on today in this hearing room that really had Washington and much of the country's attention.
And as we wait for the president, we see that the room is starting to fill up with people, reporters, maybe other officials. Who else might be in that room today, Franco, as President Trump and President Erdogan prepare to address the media?
Well, we're definitely going to have the U.S. press. We'll probably have some press from Turkey there, perhaps some other foreign press. On the U.S. side, I would expect, based on the fact that they were in the Oval Office with President Trump, Jared Kushner, President Trump's son-in-law, Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, Secretary of Treasury, Robert O'Brien, he is the new acting National Security Advisor. He took over for John Bolton, as well as Secretary of State Pompeo. So I expect they will be there as well. And you'll have probably some other supporters there in the room, possibly some of those senators who are also there with the meeting with Erdogan.
And do you expect the president to take questions, as he often does, from the wire service reporters first, or will he go for a more friendly question from some of the more conservative news outlets that may be in there?
I think that's the question that's on many of our minds. I mean, I think based on who he picks, you can sometimes glean a little bit of where his head is and what concerns he has about who is going to ask him questions. Give President Trump credit, though. He often goes to people, The Wire's John Roberts of Fox, who ask very good questions and very solid questions. I will say that the press conference should start pretty soon. We were given a 2-minute warning.
Okay, a 2-minute warning. So, Peter Kenyon, as we wait with the 2-minute warning in mind, give us a sense of what's at stake for Turkey, for Recep Tayyip Erdogan, as he faces the press just weeks after Turkey invaded Syria, angering many people in Washington.
Yes, exactly. This is his opportunity to try and repair strains in the relationship, try and restore or reaffirm what both Erdogan and President Trump say is a good personal relationship, and hope that that can steer them through a kind of a rocky time in the relationship. Because the reliance on this partnership, you know, this NATO alliance, this military alliance, economic alliance between the U.S. and Turkey is longstanding, and one that neither Erdogan nor any of the people in Turkey would like to lose. And that's despite the fact that more and more there have been interactions with Russia as tensions have risen with America. So this is a chance to reset and keep things going and try and restore ties.
And Peter, as we've been saying, there are many who don't believe that Erdogan should be given the honor of a White House visit, which he is getting today.
Well, that's right. I mean, they feel that he's not been a reliable ally. There's talk that Turkey shouldn't really be in NATO anymore. Should the U.S. be having this close partnership? And so that's a debate that's going to continue. And whether I'll be interested to see whether this meeting changes the balance on that, or brings a little more of an argument to the effect that the U.S. might still want to continue this partnership.
That is NPR international correspondent Peter Kenyon joining us from Istanbul, Turkey. We've also got NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez, who is in Washington. And we should be just seconds away from President Trump and Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan holding a press conference at the White House. It's pretty clear at this point, Franco, that they were waiting for the impeachment inquiry hearing to end before starting their press conference.
I think that's very likely. I mean, this is kind of something that President Trump at times will do. He may have been thinking about press coverage. The television networks now, as mentioned earlier, the television networks can take the press conference live, and they do not have to. They don't have to make the decision whether to switch back from the hearing to the press conference. I'm told now that some of the networks are now starting to play it. So I think they've probably gotten the green light that this is about to start. I'm told that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is now in the room, as well as the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin. He is also in the room.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
And here we go.
And the President of the Republic of Turkey.
And let's listen in. This is special coverage from NPR News and the two presidents starting their press conference at the White House. Here it is.
Thank you very much, everybody. Please. I want to begin by welcoming the First Lady with us today and the First Lady of Turkey. Thank you very much for being here. This is a great honor to have you. And we had a wonderful and very productive meeting. Before we start, I would like to thank President Erdogan for releasing detainee Serkan Gölge, who was in detention in different forms of detention. And I appreciate that very much. That was a very nice tribute. And he'll be coming back at some point in the not-too-distant future. So that's very good news for the United States and also very good news for Turkey. Turkey, as everyone knows, is a great NATO ally and a strategic partner of the United States around the world. Our economic relationship has tremendous potential and continues to expand and to grow. Direct engagement and diplomacy between our nations are essential to ensuring a future of peace and prosperity and promise for our citizens. Over the course of the day, President Erdogan and I had a frank and productive conversation on a range of very important topics. Among those topics we discussed was the situation in Syria. Last month, I sent Vice President Pence, Secretary of State Pompeo is with us, National Security Advisor O'Brien, thank you, to meet with President Erdogan and the hopes of ending all of the hostilities. The negotiations were very successful, and the United States and Turkey achieved a tremendous amount on that day, and I think we're working toward getting it better and better. It's a complicated situation. It's been going on for hundreds of years. Today, the ceasefire continues to hold, and I want to thank the President for his partnership and cooperation as we work to build a more stable and peaceful and prosperous Middle East. We've assured each other that Turkey will continue to uphold what it's supposed to uphold. I'm a big fan of the President, I have to tell you that. And I know that the ceasefire, while complicated, is moving forward and moving forward at a very rapid clip. There's a lot of people that want to see that work after so many decades and so many centuries, you might say. The United States and Turkey are working extensively on many other security issues. Turkey has the second largest armed forces in NATO after the United States, and they're a very strong second, I might add. And I'm pleased that Turkey has been steadily increasing its defense spending and is very close to the 2% of GDP range, unlike many of the other countries. At this moment, there are 8 out of the 28 countries that are current in terms of their obligation financially. Turkey has made a vital contribution to NATO's resolute support mission in Afghanistan, and his partnership was important to our destruction of the ISIS caliphate. In fact, just recently, when we took out al-Baghdadi and take him out, we did. Turkey knew that we were going over certain areas. They were very, very helpful. We appreciate that very much. Good for both countries. We really appreciate it. We're grateful to President Erdogan and to the citizens of Turkey for their cooperation in the constant struggle against terrorism. He fights it like we do. Key to our security collaboration is our trade, defense, and military equipment program. American foreign military sales to Turkey total many billions of dollars, and Turkey supplies component parts to many American defense programs. They make parts of the frame, as an example, for the F-35. Turkey's acquisition of sophisticated Russian military equipment, such as the S-400, creates some very serious challenges for us, and we are talking about it constantly. We talked about it today. We're talking about it in the future. Hopefully, we'll be able to resolve that situation. We've asked our Secretary of State and Minister of Foreign Affairs and our respective national security advisors to immediately work on resolving the S-400 issue. We've also recently agreed to work toward a $100 billion two-way trade agreement. Secretary Ross is here, and I think we've made tremendous progress in that. We have a lot of trade with Turkey, but it could be many times larger, and Turkey would like to see that. And it would also be good for the United States. So we intend to bring it up to about $100 billion. That would be four times what it is right now. Our goal is to expand commerce between the United States and Turkey, reduce our trade deficit, and ensure a truly fair and reciprocal relationship. We are, just for those of you that have any interest, we discussed it today also. Our trade agreement with China is moving along very rapidly. We'll see what happens, but it's moving along rapidly. China wants to make a deal, that I can tell you. One of my chief priorities as president has been removing the barriers to American trade and investment and ending the illicit practices that harm our workers. We encourage Turkey to further open its markets, and they are doing that. They are doing that very much. Toward American goods and American services, our markets are open. Turkey is opening up their markets, and they're opening up rapidly. Mr. President, as we have seen in recent weeks, the U.S.-Turkish alliance can be a powerful force for security and stability, not only in the Middle East but beyond. I look forward to working with you and to your representatives. I want to thank you very much all for being here. I've gotten to become very familiar with all of you, and I really appreciate you doing a fantastic job for the people of Turkey. And I look forward to continuing to find a common ground, harness common purpose, and to advance the vital interests of our people and the abiding friendship between our nations. We have a great relationship, both personally and with the great country of Turkey, and we look forward to moving that forward and making it an even bigger and better relationship. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sayın Başkan.
Mr. President, my dear friend.
President Erdogan of Turkey speaking through an interpreter here at a live press conference with President Trump. Press,
I would like to, at the onset, salute you with my most heartfelt emotions on behalf of myself and my nation. First and foremost, I would like to thank my dear friend President Trump and the First Lady of the United States for being such gracious hosts today. We've managed to comprehensively discuss all the issues in our agendas with Mr. President all throughout the day, and the discussions were very sincere. We all agree that we need to further profound our cooperation and that Turkish-American relations should be erected upon a strong and a very healthy foundation. I think we should remain resolved in order to open a new chapter in our relations, which are in full compliance with our deeply rooted alliance. We have reciprocally stated our will to fight terrorist organizations imposing a clear and a present danger upon our national security. We have especially underlined the significance of fighting against Daesh in a sustained fashion, especially in the aftermath of the demise of Baghdadi, the death of Baghdadi. We have detained several prisoners trying to flee the prisons in Syria and come to Turkey, and we currently have more than 200 Daesh terrorists who have been incarcerated. And with the Operation Peace Spring initiated on October the 9th, Turkey took another step forward in fighting terrorism in a very resolute fashion. Our country, with this operation, blew a very significant impact upon the separatist agenda of terrorist organizations such as PKK and YPG in Syria.
Yakaladığımızı düşünüyoruz.
In order to further strengthen our cooperation in Syria, we believe we have gained a significant momentum with our October 17th agreement or memorandum. But in order to harm this memorandum, PKK and YPG are attacking our soldiers and the civilians in a very provocative fashion. And in the last 24 hours, more than 19 attacks and harassing shots took place. And at the beginning of this month, in Tel Abyad, a bomb was placed, an explosive device was placed in an outdoor market, and as a result of the explosion, 13 civilian lives were lost. Despite all of these developments, in order to settle the conflict in Syria in a sustained fashion, we are reiterating our commitment to our memorandum, our agreement with the United States. But some circles who are empathetic towards these terrorist organizations are feeling deeply upset, they are deeply disturbed, and they are using this information in order to cloud the understanding of the public opinion and that perception with the eventual gain or goal of harming our relations. And some historical developments and allegations are being used in order to dynamite our reciprocal and bilateral relations. Especially in the House of Representatives, some of the resolutions that were passed on October 29th served this very purpose, hurt deeply the Turkish nation, and they have a potential of casting a deep shadow over our bilateral relations. And I shared this information with Mr. President. The decision makers in an incident that took place about 104 years ago should not be politicians, but historians. We have nothing to hide, and we have a full self-esteem in that regard. But I need to state very clearly that we are, as Turkey, on the side of dialogue and open discussion and debate. And we have voiced our proposals to the Armenian party to open the archives reciprocally and establish a history commission. I believe the Senate will take the United States out of this vicious cycle, which happened as a result of the resolution of the House of Representatives. Turkey and the United States stand side by side in order to fully eradicate Daesh and in order to bring peace and stability to Syria once and for all. And for this purpose, we should keep on working together. Turkey remains, or it should be, the most reliable partner of the United States in this region to achieve these targets. We are the only NATO ally, as Turkey, who has fought Daesh in a very resolved fashion. And until so far, we have detained 7,680 foreign fighters, and we have sent them back to their countries of origin. And we have banned entry to 77,000 individuals who are considered to be affiliated with Daesh terrorist organization. And right now in our prisons, a total of 1,216 Daesh members are incarcerated, coming from 40 different countries. We have quite recently detained 287 individuals, including women and children, who have fled the prisons that PKK and YPG used to control. Our country is being showcased as a target, and this terrorist organization caused 304 Turkish citizens to die, and against which we are going to keep on fighting. And it's very important to understand that the foreign fighters should be accepted by the countries of origin. And we have the same understanding with President Trump in order to convince the countries of origin to do this. Distinguished ladies and gentlemen, we have a borderline of 911 kilometers with Syria. And when the war broke out 9 years ago, we were the ones at the forefront impacted heavily, and maybe the most. Currently, we have 3,650,000 Syrian refugees and a total of more than 4 million refugees. And we have spent about $40 billion even beyond that for these refugees in our country. And until so far, Europe only sent 3 billion euros despite a higher pledge through our NGOs. And similarly, we are providing sustained humanitarian aid to more than 3 million people living on the Syrian territory. Back in the year 2015, at the G20 Antalya summit, I launched an appeal in order to establish a safe zone in Syria. But because of the delay, tens of thousands of civilian lives were lost. This problem cannot continue forever and ever. Previously, with our Operation Euphrates Shield and Operation Olive Branch, we have managed to clear an area of 4,000 square kilometers of terrorist presence.
This is President Erdogan of Turkey speaking live in Washington. And by the way, he's been mentioning Daesh. That is another word for the Islamic State or ISIS.
I said Operation Euphrates Shield and Operation Olive Branch. And through these operations, we've managed to repatriate 365,000 Syrians back to their motherlands, especially in Jarablus. And thanks to the Operation Peace Spring, we have secured many towns and many villages, and the rightful settlers are going back. We have shared our projects with President Trump and our several plans for the safe zone. And with the support of the United Nations and international community, we can repatriate many more Syrian refugees in the northern part of Syria. We're talking about an area of 444 kilometers in length and 32 kilometers in depth. 1 million people can be repatriated. And in Raqqa and Deir ez-Zor, 1 million more individuals can be repatriated. So a total of 2 million refugees can be repatriated. Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, the Fethullah's terrorist organization known as FETÖ attempted to destroy the constitutional order of Turkey with a failed coup attempt, and it is a terrorist organization behind this failed coup. They have killed 251 individuals, harming 2,193 citizens, and they have even dared to bomb our parliament airborne. We have once again accentuated our expectations vis-a-vis our friends at the U.S. administration to once and for all eradicate FETÖ presence here. And we have also discussed with President Trump how to achieve the $100 billion trade volume threshold as soon as possible. We believe that we should not confuse political incidents with commerce-related aspirations. And our secretaries of commerce are currently heavily invested in achieving the $100 billion threshold. We hope and pray that we will shy away from certain measures which will make it much more challenging for us to reach these targets. And we have also quite naturally discussed our deeply rooted relations in the field of defense industry. Primarily the S-400 system and the F-35 program, we can only surmount the hurdles that we experience through dialogue. My dear friend previously stated back in Osaka at the G20 summit the injustice orchestrated against Turkey in terms of the acquisition of Patriot missiles. And we have clearly stated to President Trump that under suitable circumstances, we could acquire Patriot missiles as well. As Turkey, we are ready and committed to sustain a very constructive dialogue with the United States Congress, and this is an idea that I've shared with President Trump as well. So with these thoughts in mind, I hope and pray that our discussions and deliberations all throughout the day with President Trump will yield the most auspicious results. I would like to take this opportunity to thank President Trump for their kind invitation and for being such gracious hosts all throughout the day. On behalf of my personal self, on behalf of my delegation, I would like to thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Special coverage from NPR President. News. Here's and President Trump speaking live at the White House.
Called up the Senate. I asked a couple of our senators, and we really ended up with five, and others wanting to come, and we'll keep them apprised. But some of them joined us. They happen to be here. Senator Jim Risch, thank you, Jim, very much. Ted Cruz, thank you very much. Lindsey Graham, Lindsey, thank you. And Rick Scott, thank you, Rick, very much. Joni is here. Joni Ernst, someplace. These are people that want to see peace in the Middle East, and I thought it would be appropriate to have them come over. And they met with the president, and we had a lot of very frank discussion. And we're dealing with a very big subject, a complex subject. It's been going on for centuries in many cases, but we're making a lot of progress, tremendous progress in the Middle East. Okay, a couple of questions. Go ahead. OAN, go ahead. Thank you.
First, I'd like to just start out getting your general reaction today to the impeachment hearings on the Hill. Do you feel that Democrats made their case, and how did you feel about the Republican performance?
You're talking about the witch hunt? Is that what you mean? Is that what you're talking about? I hear it's a joke. I haven't watched. I haven't watched for 1 minute because I've been with the president, which is much more important as far as I'm concerned. This is a sham and shouldn't be allowed. It was a situation that was caused by people that shouldn't have allowed it to happen. I want to find out who is the whistleblower, because the whistleblower gave a lot of very incorrect information, including my call with the president of Ukraine, which was a perfect call and highly appropriate. And he wrote something that was much different than the fact. I want to find out why the IG, why would he have presented that when, in fact, all he had to do is check the call itself and he would have seen it. I'm going to be releasing, I think, on Thursday, a second call, which actually was the first of the two. And you'll make a determination as to what you think there. But I've heard just a report. They said it's all third-hand information, nothing direct at all. It can't be direct because I never said it. And all they have to do is look very, very simply at the transcript. If you read the transcript, this was analyzed by great lawyers. This was analyzed by Greg Jarrett. It was analyzed by Mark Levin. It was analyzed by everybody. They said this statement that I made, the whole call that I made with the president of Ukraine, was a perfect one. So that this country gets put through that, that we have to waste this gentleman's time by even thinking about it, talking about it, I'd much rather focus on peace in the Middle East. And I hear that it's I hear that it's a hoax, and it's being played as a hoax. That's what I hear, but you'll have to tell me. Go ahead.
Then, if I may, on Syria and peace in the Middle East, President Erdogan talked about repatriating Syrian refugees back to their homeland. Have you had those discussions with European leaders, since there are so many Syrian
refugees? Well, no, I think that, frankly, Europe should be paying for this to a large extent. As of this moment, Turkey's been paying for most of it. I think the president was saying today they've spent over $40 billion on the cost of that. $40 billion. How much?
$30 million.
40. That's what I said. Whatever. He spent a lot, okay? They're throwing out all these different numbers. I heard it was $40 billion. How was that? $40 billion, correct? So $40 billion. And I've heard that number from others, and that's a lot. Europe has contributed about three, a lot of these people would go all throughout Europe. I mean, it would be a devastating situation for Europe because he's got 4 million people. He has a lot of Kurds, too, that they're helping and taking care of. So I have spoken to Europe about it. I think they should help us with ISIS because many of them left France and they left Germany and they left UK. They left different countries. And these countries should help us because if they ever did get released, which we won't be doing, but if they ever did get released, that's where they want to go. They want to go back to France and Germany and UK and all of those other countries that are not helping us. I gave them the option, would you like to have them back? And intelligently, they said, no, thank you. But that's not right, and it's not fair. I can tell you also that Turkey captured when they some escaped during the conflict, when they had the heavy shooting. And, I mean, I think I know how they happened to escape, but it's one of those things. Doesn't matter, because Turkey captured everybody that escaped, plus an additional group. When we took over, when I became president, ISIS was rampant all over the Middle East. And as of about a month ago, I think, Lindsay, we can say that we have now 100% of the caliphate. And they'll always try and grow, but they haven't been able to do that. And what we did last week with al-Baghdadi, who is the absolute founder, leader, set them back. We also got his number two, and we have our sights on his number three. So they're not going to be growing too fast. But I will say Turkey's been helping us a lot.
So with that, I also have a question for President Erdogan. With the what you're calling a realignment along the northern Syria border, a lot of Christians in that region are feeling very vulnerable. Groups on the ground are saying that attacks on Christians have increased under this new policy and that they're not feeling safe any longer. Can you guarantee that the Turkish government will also protect Christians in that region?
This is a reporter from the One America Network. That's a conservative news network asking a question of President Erdogan of Turkey live at the White House.
Çok teşekkür.
Thank you. Thank you. On the contrary, Kaldani, Yazidi, and Christian minorities is an area where we're especially sensitive about, and we have certain different plans. Whether it be the ones remaining on the side of Syria, whose sanctuaries have been destroyed, whose churches had been destroyed, we'll see their sanctuaries getting revived, and their churches will be reconstructed so that they can go back and start praying there again. And these are the plans that we're making for them. As I said before, the Christian minorities, Aramaic, Catholics, Kaldani and Yazidi, the ones who are living on our side of the border, have no problems whatsoever. But the ones remaining on the side of the Syrian territory will see their worshipping practices restored and revived in a special manner. They are receiving health care, they're receiving humanitarian aid in every aspect possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would you like to pick somebody?
Evet. Hilal Hanım, buyur.
A friendly person from Turkey, please. Friendly. Only friendly reporters. We like to see. There aren't too many of them around.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
The burden of Obama's flawed foreign policy, and one of those flaws was allying the U.S. with the U.S. designated terrorist organization, the PKK, and a Syrian offshoot YPG. You're trying to mend the damage that it did to U.S.-Turkey relations. However, you also invited the ringleader of YPG to the White House. His codename, Mazen Kobani. And he is responsible for at least 18 terrorist attacks in Turkey, which caused the death of 164 soldiers and 48 civilians. So after today's meeting, do you still think of inviting him to the White House, which will be very offensive and hurtful for the Turkish public? Thank you.
Well, I had a very good talk with him. We had a very good recently. And we're working very closely together, and we're also working very closely together with your great president. And a lot of things are happening. A lot of very positive developments are happening. A lot of that is definition. What's your definition of the various groups within the Kurds? You call the Kurds, and then you have various groups, and some like them and some don't. But I think we've made a tremendous we've gained a tremendous amount of momentum and strength and knowledge over the last short period of time. So we'll see what happens. But I will say that the relationship with President Erdogan and Turkey has been outstanding. And, you know, it's a major country with a tremendous military. They're one of our very big purchases of military equipment. They have the finest equipment in the world. which the United States makes. We make by far the best equipment in the world. Turkey understood that a long time ago. So I think a tremendous amount of progress is being made. Okay? Thank you very much. You could ask the president a question now. Same report. You sure you're a reporter? You don't work for Turkey with that question?
Me? Okay. I'll be glad to. Sayın Cumhurbaşkanım, özellikle FETÖ mevzusunda...
Mr. President, about FETÖ, we are not getting the best of news out of the United States. And the FETÖ office targeting Turkey is extensively invested in their daily works. But I can see certain traces that the US government is ready to understand more about FETÖ. So my question is, how do you perceive the situation developing vis-a-vis the Fethullahist terrorist organization and the American approach to FETÖ in that regard? Can we expect anything further? Yes. Thank you. During this current visit, we are going to submit, as we already have actually, a great deal of documents and evidence. And FETÖ is a terrorist organization, and he is the leader, the ringleader of this terrorist organization. They have killed 251 people in Turkey. They tried to undertake a coup against the government, the state, and more than 2,000 people have been injured, and the ringleader is living on an area of 400 acres in the United States, running his network all around the globe. And this is something unacceptable. And during this visit, as I've said before, we have introduced an additional array of documents. We will submit them to the relevant authorities, including Mr. President. And in the light of these documents, I think they will appreciate the situation. We sent the terrorists back if they ask for them, and I'm sure they will do the same for us.
Fox, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
This is special coverage of President Trump's press conference with President Erdogan at the White House.
Ambassador Bill Taylor recounted a conversation that an aide of his overheard. It was the day after the phone call with Zelensky on July the 26th, in which the aide says that he overheard you say to Sondland, how are things going with the proceeding with the investigations? Sondland repeated back to you, according to this aide, that Ukraine was prepared to do everything that you wanted it to do. Is that correct? And can you fill in some more?
I know nothing about that. First time I've heard it. The one thing I've seen that Sondland said was that he did speak to me for a brief moment, and I said no quid pro quo under any circumstances, and that's true. The other, I've never heard this. In any event, it's more secondhand information, but I've never heard it.
Do you recall having a conversation with
I don't recall. No, not at all. Not even a little bit. The only thing, and I guess Sondland has stayed with his testimony, that there was no quid pro quo. Pure and simple. Yes, please.
And to President Erdogan, President Trump sent you a letter on October the 9th urging you not to launch a military action into northern Syria. He said, quote, don't be a tough guy, don't be a fool. You ignored that letter and you went ahead and you launched a military action into northern Syria. Can you explain why you ignored the president's warning?
Well, this letter was represented to Mr. President this afternoon, and I've also underlined the fact that a terrorist such as Ferit Abdüşahin should not be considered as an interlocutor by a country such as the United States. And this individual, Ferit Abdüşahin, has been instrumental in the killings of hundreds of Turkish civilians, and he is a person labeled as like a son for the terrorist leader who is currently incarcerated in Turkey, Abdullah Öcalan. So a person like this should not be welcomed by a country such as the United States. And similarly, this person was welcomed by a country such as Russia. So
It's very difficult for me to understand these when we're trying to fight terrorism on a global scale. If we're going to sustain our fight against terrorism in a healthy fashion, we need to be much more sensitive than we currently are. It happens to us today, and it will happen to somebody else tomorrow, is a saying that goes in our language. We have also provided information and the document thereof to our interlocutors in the White House, including Mr. President. And I've also submitted a document produced by CIA pointing out to the fact that this individual is a terrorist to Mr. President. And as I've said before, I've shared them with His Excellency, Mr. President. And we gave back the letter that we have received.
President, please.
For me.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kurt from Kurdistan. Thank you very much, Mr. President, for all you have done for Kurdistan and for Peshmerga in fight against ISIS.
Yep, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
My question is, all senators I meet, all of them, I interviewed them, they believe Kurdistan is very unique in the Middle East and protect all minorities.
Right.
What is your clear policy on the Kurds right now? And another question for President Erdogan, why you are not able for negotiation with the Kurds in Syria as Iraqi Kurdistan? Do you think they will be your friends in future? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr.
Well, thank you very much. And I will say that we've had a great relationship with the Kurds. And we fought with them very successfully against ISIS. We fought together. We had we have great generals and we have great equipment, and it certainly helped a lot. But we were very, very successful, and we captured, as I said before, 100%. I was going to, when we were at 97%, I was going to say, well, that sounds pretty high to me. And I was thinking about stopping it then, and a lot of people said, please go to 100. And very quickly, very rapidly, the military got the 100. I wanted to have that. But we have a great relationship with the Kurds. We have had. We're with them now. We get along with them. And by the way, I think the president, he may have some factions within the Kurds, but I think the president has a great relationship with the Kurds. Many Kurds live currently in Turkey, and they're happy and they're taken care of, including health care. We were talking about it before, including health care and education and other things. So that's really a misnomer. But our relationship with the Kurds has been a very good one. Okay? Thank you.
First, we have to make a distinction between two things. We have no problems with the Kurds. We have problems with terrorist organizations. Some terrorists coming out of the Kurds. Which are they? What are they? PYD and YPG, which are offshoots of the terrorist organization PKK. Just as we have no problems with our brothers and sisters in the northern part of Iraq, where we enjoy great relations, and we have no problems with, similarly, our brothers and sisters in the northern part of Syria. During the times when Assad was not recognizing the Kurdish presence in the northern part, I told him that he needs to give these individuals passports and that he was making a mistake. And secondly, there's something really important. I want you to know this. My political party has more than 50 MPs of Kurdish ethnicity in the Turkish parliament. We don't have problems with the Kurds, but we have problems with the terrorists. And, of course, you're not going to own up to the terrorists, are you? Whoever they are, whoever they might be, but we have to make a distinction here. We're just fighting terrorists, period. Because the terrorists don't have an ethnicity, they don't have a nationality, they don't have a flag. If they are terrorists, that is a terrorist. If you don't fight back, then tomorrow you will have to pay a very hefty price. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. Thank you.
You've been listening to a press conference at the White House with President Trump and the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Jeremy Hobson, and we are joined for just a few minutes of analysis by NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez in Washington and NPR's international correspondent Peter Kenyon, who is in Istanbul, Turkey. Franco, lots in that press conference, but the questions went to what even President Trump described as friendly reporters, one from the One America Network, which is a conservative news outlet, and then Fox News' John Roberts, who did ask some tough questions, but still Fox News, very friendly to the president.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, one, Trump did mention to Erdogan that you should pick a friendly network. And certainly Trump went to two of networks that are kind of go-tos for the administration. But both of them asked about the impeachment. And Trump was, you know, said that he hadn't been watching the impeachment. But as we noted, he'd been tweeting since. I will note that he did say that tomorrow he plans to release the transcript of the first Ukraine call. That would be the April call, though we understand that that call was largely a congratulatory call based on testimony. And John Roberts did ask him about, you know, the new news that we had heard today about Bill Taylor, William Taylor, about whether President Trump did ask Ambassador Gordon Sondland about quote unquote investigations. President Trump said he did not recall that. He had no recollection of that, according to President Trump.
Peter Kenyon, it seemed like there were a lot of topics that would be of interest to the Turkish press and the Turkish audience there. What stuck out to you?
Well, yeah, they sounds like they covered quite a lot of ground. The big issue, of course, being those missiles and the F-35 jets. And it sounds like they got somewhere, but nowhere near where they could talk about any kind of results. So it sounds like they're a bit of a ways off from resolving this problem with Turkey going to Russia and buying a missile defense system yet. But also the whole question of the defense industry in general, the House of the resolution on the Armenian genocide, the president Erdogan was interested in talking about that. But it sounded like no huge issues were resolved. I mean, they didn't answer any question definitively. There's more talking to do, is that's the takeaway I got.
That is NPR international correspondent Peter Kenyon in Istanbul, Turkey, and NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez in Washington, as we've been watching President Trump and President Erdogan of Turkey hold a press conference. I want to thank both of you so much for helping us before, especially when we had so much time to talk before they started. Thanks for your insights, both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And that is where we will wrap up this very long day of special coverage from NPR News. Stay with us for the latest on the impeachment inquiry and more on this NPR station. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Thanks for listening.